Okay, so Maria.
I'm already curious and nervous and excited and a little scared.
Good. In this box, there's an object that is currently banned in Mexico, but sold out online here in the States. What do you think it is?
What could it be? It's banned in Mexico? The first thing I thought of was something to make hot chocolate. You know, the hot chocolate makers, but no, totally not. I need some more information.
Well, let's hear the guesses from the people of the streets of Harlem.
Wait, what was the question?
It was, in this box, there is an object that is currently banned in Mexico, but sold out online in the U.S. What do you think it is?
I bet people said sex toys.
I have no idea. I don't know. Is it a sex toy?
Any type of drugs, like a vitamin.
A device for smoking marijuana.
Chipotle.
What'd you say?
Chipotle, I said. No, I don't know.
Chipotle?
Donald Trump's autobiography.
Cajade muerto? Cajade
sa. Muerto? And he guessed a box of the dead, which, like, quien sabe. And
I need, give me some more. I'm going to try.
You're going to try? I'll give you a clue.
Okay.
I've been talking about it a lot.
Oh, my God. The Frida Kahlo Barbie.
Ding, ding, ding.
Quote by the famous artist and activist Frida Kahlo, who is now one of the first dolls in the new Barbie Inspiring Women's collection.
She's banned in Mexico, de verdad?
Yeah, so
So you can't buy her?
No. And the reason you can't buy her is because Frida Kahlo's great-grandniece sued Mattel, claiming that they did not have the proper legal licensing to Frida Kahlo's image.
So the Mattel toy company creates a Frida Kahlo Barbie without ever talking to the Frida Kahlo family?
Yeah, so Mattel didn't actually work with Frida Kahlo's family. They worked with the Frida Kahlo Corporation, which is this entity that claims to hold the legal rights to Frida's image.
These family members are coming out to say something just to be able to grab a little piece of the spotlight that Frida Kahlo brings.
This is Beatriz Alvarado. She's a spokesperson for the corporation.
So I think it was very selfish.
The Frida Kahlo Corporation has been overseeing the licensing of Frida Kahlo's image on products worldwide. When I went to the website, I saw that they had licensed her image for mezcales, hotel rooms that are Frida Kahlo themed. But based on those interviews that I did on the street, it seems like the Frida Kahlo Corporation might not have done such a great job at guiding Mattel to make a Barbie that really looks like Frida Kahlo.
A doll. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I would have never guessed that.
What kind of doll?
Well, an ethnically Mexican-looking doll. Yeah?
Do you recognize who it is?
No, I don't.
So, who is she?
Who do you think that is?
Well, what are her eyebrows like? It's not Frida Kahlo. Because there's a hint of a unibrow, but not an entire unibrow.
But if you ask Beatriz about this...
The Barbie has an unibrow, a soft unibrow. So there is an unibrow. I'm lucky to have one in front of me, and then I'm seeing, and I know there is an unibrow.
So I can confirm there is a very faint unibrow, but it's kind of hard to see unless you look really close. Regardless, it seems like the doll did not fully capture the essence of Frida Kahlo. I mean, however, like, the doll is beautiful. She has these intricate braids with little red flowers in them and this red shawl and golden, seemingly Aztec-inspired jewelry. But the real-life Frida had one leg longer than the other, a broken spine, and this doll just has, like, that perfect-proportioned Barbie body. And the doll just seems, like, girlier, plainer, and just not quite Frida. I reached out to Mattel multiple times for an interview about the doll, and after a lot of back and forth, they stopped responding to my emails. This was back in March when they first announced the doll for International Women's Day, and they announced the doll alongside other famous, quote, inspiring role model dolls like Amelia Earhart and filmmaker Ava DuVernay, but it was this Frida Barbie doll that got the most attention. I mean, we saw in our office just like the Twitter explosion that happened once this doll was announced was crazy. There were people on Twitter saying that this was abomination, that Frida Kahlo must be rolling in her grave. Frida Kahlo was this radical leftist figure who didn't adhere to Western beauty standards. And Barbie is like the ultimate symbol of Western beauty standards. Then there were other people who were like, finally, more representation. You know, Barbie is like the most recognized doll brand in America, and they should be representing a diverse group of women. So that's the whole conversation online.
Hi.
Hi.
When I talk to actual kids about the doll.
What are your names?
My name is Zoe, and she's Sophia.
So I am Sophia.
They seemed to like it. Do you guys play with dolls?
Yeah.
What do you think about this doll? There is something about this doll that incites very strong reactions. Seeing how intensely people defended or dismissed the doll, I became kind of obsessed. And so I've done a lot of reading and talking to serious Barbie and Frida experts. And what I've learned is that although Frida Kahlo and Barbie might seem opposed to each other, they actually share one big similarity, which is that they've both been very influential in how we think about what it means to be a modern woman.
From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. And today, the breakdown, the surprisingly intertwined history of two of the world's most renowned female icons, Frida Kahlo and Barbie.
We're going to do some serious unpacking of both Frida Kahlo and Barbie's backstories. Because while I thought I knew a lot about them, there are a lot of surprising details that I am straight up pumped to share with you. But first, the basics. Frida Kahlo was a painter. She was a communist.
Radical, revolutionary, bisexual.
She was all those things. Frida Kahlo was born in 1907 in Mexico City to a mestiza mother and a...
German father.
German-Jewish.
German-Jewish? I didn't know about the Jewish part.
Well, it's actually been contested if Frida was in fact Jewish, but her whole life she claimed to be. Do you know the name of the woman who created Barbie?
No.
Her name was Ruth Handler, but her birth name was Ruth Moskow, and she was the daughter of two Polish Jewish immigrants. For the story, I spoke to M.G. Lord, who is the author of a book called Forever Barbie. It was the first book to really do a deep dive into the history of the doll.
The Handlers were second-generation Jewish immigrants, and their approach to toys was very similar to the approach that the Jewish studio moguls took toward the making of films.
MG is talking about the heads of major movie studios in the 1950s, like Louis B. Mayer of MGM and Adolf Zucker of Paramount. They were also Jewish. They were immigrants themselves. They produced movies that portrayed this very white, very Anglo version of the United States.
The films created an impossible America, an America that was so American that no one could really belong to it. It was a myth.
Where's your mother?
We're looking for you.
With Uncle Billy.
Daddy! Zozo, my little ginger snap, how do you feel?
Fine. Not a snitch of kids.
And then they colonized the imaginations of more recent and less recent immigrants with this idea of an idealized white America that didn't even exist.
That's one of the problems that I had with Barbie, frankly. Even though I had the little Barbie house and I had the Ken, it was always like, this is impossible and this is unattainable and it is entirely fake.
The thing is, though, just as Barbie played up her quote-unquote Americanness, Frida Kahlo also played up her own Mexican indigenous identity, starting with the way she dressed. The peasant shirts, the embroidery, the flowers.
The long, flowy skirt, mm-hmm. Oftentimes involving a headdress sometimes.
Yeah, the classic Frida look. And it's actually the traditional Tehuana outfit. The Tehuana dresses are known for being colorful and intricate. And Tehuantepec, the region in Oaxaca where the dresses come from, is known for being a historically matriarchal society, which Frida loved. No one in Frida's family or social circle, which was this upper class, bourgeois, intellectual circle, actually wore clothes like that. But Frida did, and it was because she was taking a definitive stance to look more Mexican, and more indigenous. And she also did something that I think is really funny, which is she lied all the time about when her birthday was and told everyone that it was the year that the Mexican Revolution started.
So the thing about Frida Kahlo also is that she was making a statement as, I want to actively own my indigenous roots, whether or not I can clearly, definitively tie them so deeply, which is something that, again, someone like me also did. My cousins in Mexico made fun of me when I would wear this type of shirt or huaraches, because it was like, what are you trying to, like, own something that you're not? And I felt like I was trying to say, no, but this is me. This is me. I have to wear this because I want you to see that I'm Mexican. And at the same time, you know, like Frida, the truth is that I have that privilege to choose to wear those clothes when not everybody does.
Frida was making a political statement by wearing those clothes. She wanted to associate herself with working class Mexicans. She was part of the Mexicanidad movement along with Diego Rivera, who would later become her husband. And they were both like super involved in leftist causes. They were members of the Mexican Communist Party. They even took in communist exiles like Leon Trotsky into their home. Diego was also a painter, and he was very famous in his own lifetime for his murals, which would depict working-class Mexicans and also famous scenes in Mexico's history in which he put indigenous people in the forefront as a way of reclaiming Mexico's history. So both Ruth Handler, the creator of Barbie, and Frida herself were very aware of the fact that they were creating very strong nationalistic symbols. Barbie was the quintessential American girl, and Frida had made herself into the quintessential Mexican woman. And the first Frida self-portrait and the first Barbie...
No, don't tell me they come the same year?
No, actually, they're very far apart in time. No. But they do have weird parallels. And in general, there are all these strange parallels between Frida and Barbie, and I want to go through some of them.
But we're going to have to wait to listen to them till after the break. Stay with us. No te vayas.
Hey, Asma.
Hey, Scott.
Another crazy week. We've got North Korea.
Yep, we got Russia.
Midterms.
And, of course, President Trump. And what happens whenever there is crazy news that erupts? We pop into the studio and break it down to make sense.
So if you see a headline...
We've discussed it.
It's the NPR Politics Podcast.
Hey, we're back. And when we left off, producer Antonia Cerejido was talking about the parallels between Frida Kahlo and Barbie's stories. And we're going to jump back in, comparing the origin story of the very first Barbie and Frida Kahlo's very first self-portrait.
Frida paints her first self-portrait in 1926. And the reason she paints her first self-portrait is actually really tragic. In 1925, she went through a horrible trolley accident that severed her spine into five pieces. An entire pole just impales her pelvis. At the time, she had her high school boyfriend was this guy named Alejandro, and she just wrote him these really long love letters. And she was really depressed because he wouldn't go visit her. And so to win him back, she painted a self-portrait of herself that looks really different than the sort of image that we think of when we think of Frida Kahlo. This is it.
I was going to say, this is her first one?
Mm-hmm.
It's the most traditional of her self-portraits.
It's notable partly for its lack of color. It's like all dark shades of browns and blacks. Normally, we associate Frida with these like bright colors. And like also her just intense, penetrating gaze. In this painting, she kind of looks like coy. Like, her gaze is soft and her head is a little cocked to the side. And again, she made this painting to send it to her boyfriend at the time. So that is the story of the first Frida Kahlo portrait. I asked MG Lord, the author of Forever Barbie, to tell me about the first Barbie.
When Barbie was first introduced at Toy Fair in 1959, she sank like a stone. The male toy buyers were made really uncomfortable by what they saw as, well, what the doll was based on, a slightly pornographic gag gift for men.
Oh my God.
Did you know that?
No, I did not know that.
The inspiration for Barbie came from when Ruth Handler was in Germany. Weirdly, Germany plays a role in all of this. she was in Germany and she was walking by a store and she saw a 3D model doll that was this like sex toy based on this like comic strip in Germany. And she thought that little girls in America would love to play with it. The reason she liked it is because she'd noticed that her daughter and her daughter's friends would play with cutout paper dolls and that they loved to dress them. Because previously to this, all of the dolls that little girls played with were baby dolls.
But Barbie invited a whole new way of engaging with dolls, you know, projecting your adult identity onto this thing, playing out an adult life, and an adult life, interestingly, with no positions of responsibility. There were no parents in Barbie's world. There were no children in Barbie's world. You know, Barbie was on her own.
Barbie came out in the late 1950s, and World War II had just ended. Americans were going through what is now known as the golden age of capitalism. It was this time where the economy was booming, and many blue-collar workers were experiencing home ownership or even vacations for the first time. And it was in that environment that little girls were playing with the first Barbies. Immediately, little girls loved the doll. But moms hated it. They were like, I'm not giving my daughter a pornographic doll. Then Ruth Handler hired a psychologist to do a survey of daughters and mothers to see how they could try to sell the doll. And what he found was that even the, quote, homeliest of girls would want to, like, brush Barbie's hair and learn how to primp her and put her in dresses. And then it actually became sold to mothers as a way of teaching your daughter how to make themselves up in a way that a man will like.
Whoa. Put on the clothes, see what it looks like. Maybe then you want to wear those same clothes and see what it looks like.
Exactly.
Someday I'm gonna be exactly like you. Till then I know just what I'll do. Barbie, beautiful Barbie. I'll make believe that I am you.
You can tell it's Mattel. It's swell.
So it is this thing of like, yeah, it's you in the future, but it's a version of you that is palatable to the male gaze.
Got it.
But Frida Kahlo's portrait, made for the male gaze, the first one. This doll, made for the male gaze.
Got it.
But I think beyond this idea of the male gaze, the idea that a little girl can project her identity onto the Barbie has a more interesting parallel to the Frida Kahlo portraits. Frida is famous for painting self-portraits. And after her trolley accident, she had very limited mobility. So in a way, her paintings acted as her avatars, going places where she couldn't. And when little kids play with Barbies, they're portraying themselves into a world that they can't access, like adult world. And I think that that's a really cool parallel between Frida having her portrait as an avatar and the Barbie acting as like an avatar for a little kid. But then there are a couple of other parallels I find really amusing. Barbie has her dream house that's very famous.
Barbie! I just moved into my newest, biggest dream house ever.
Oh, and Frida Kahlo has her blue house, which is also very famous. Both were part of iconic relationships. Obviously, Barbie and Ken. And then Frida and Diego.
Ahora bien, ¿qué cosa es el arte? ¿Por qué desde los primeros pasos de la humanidad en la Tierra
I find the idea of women going goo-goo over a guy who talks like this with this crazy stern voice. And also, Diego Rivera, his looks were not... Let's just say he didn't really look like Ken. I find the idea of girls going crazy over him really funny. But in his lifetime, he actually was a big ladies' man. So Diego and Frida had a very tumultuous, very loving at times, but really intense relationship up until Frida's passing. Together, they traveled across the U.S. They made a lot of international friends. But during the last years of Frida's life, she couldn't travel very much because she just never fully recovered from her trolley accident. In 1953, when Frida was 46, she finally had her first and what would ultimately be her last solo show that she could attend. Frida's doctor had told her that she was not in a good enough condition to go to the opening of the show, but she was like, I don't care what he says, I want to go, it's my first solo show. And so she gets on a stretcher, they like take her on a stretcher, they put her on a truck, she gets to the gallery, and then she's just taken around the gallery on the stretcher. She gets to greet all of her friends and family, and a year later, while gravely ill with pneumonia, Frida dies in her home. The first Barbie came out 4 years after, so they actually never existed during the same time. And so this is the first Barbie. She's iconic. It's the one wearing that, like, black and white bathing suit. Her blonde hair is in a ponytail, and she's this, like, dainty, pointy face.
The faces of these Barbies, the very early, this is more similar to the Barbies that I was playing with.
To me, the most startling thing is that the early Barbies, their eyes look to the side. They wouldn't look at you in the face. They had averted eyes.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, until the 70s. That was the women's movement. They're like, oh, I guess Barbie is allowed to look at people and not have to look away.
Let's go shopping with Barbie.
It's in the late 60s, early 70s, as the women's movement and other counterculture movements are taking off, that Barbie sales start to sink for the first time. You can even feel how unpopular she was at this time in this depressing Barbie commercial from 1970.
Sure, dolls are fun.
I love being a fashion model.
But both Frida and Barbie were about to have a big resurgence. Frida first, in the late 70s, as an icon for the emerging Chicana movement. I spoke to Amalia Mesa Baines, who is a Chicana artist, and she remembers seeing Frida's art close up when she went to Mexico City for the first time.
And I got a chance to see the large painting of Frida Kahlo's Dos Fridas, which to me is a purely Chicana painting. It's about two identities that make peace with each other.
In the painting, there are two versions of Frida sitting next to each other, connected by a bleeding heart. One is wearing a Victorian dress, and the other a Tijuana dress. It seems to be a commentary on her mixed-race identity.
I felt always that those were the things we were struggling with, trying to be American when we were still, to some degree, Mexican or, in this case, Chicana.
Amalia related to Frida's depiction of being caught between two worlds. But it was more than that. Frida's radical politics resonated with her as well.
When I say I am a Chicana, I'm saying to you, I have political values about equity, and I want things to change.
So at the same time that Frida is becoming this big Chicana symbol, something else is happening in the U.S. for women, which is that women start to enter, particularly the corporate workforce, in droves. This is like peak Donna Summers, she works hard for her money years. From 1972 to 1985, women's share of professional jobs went up 5%, which doesn't seem huge. But during that time, management jobs nearly doubled. So, like, women entering the workforce is this, like, whole thing, and all of a sudden,
Barbie and Barbie's weird body was back in vogue. Large breasts, broad shoulders with those shoulder pads.
And I think the best representation of why Barbie was big in the 80s is this amazing commercial for Day to Night Barbie.
Here's Day to Night Barbie. Day to Night canceled separately.
We girls make work and lots of fun.
Right, Barbie?
Day to Night Barbie.
Meet briefcase and stuff.
Change and set for an evening with Ken. Secret turnaround skirt, fabulous
I had a change around. I had a change around outfit for sure.
Yeah.
For her. I don't remember if it was like work to, but, you know, the change around outfits for Barbie were a big deal.
But yeah, there was this idea of like, you can have it all. You can work in your high corporate office and then you go out and have fun. One thing that is very important in both Barbie and Frida's trajectory is the fact that they were childless. Frida, not by choice, and Barbie, very much by choice. Barbie was revolutionary in the sense that, like, her main thing was, like, to work and make money and spend money. That was, like, Barbie's whole shindig.
The American woman. Independent with money.
And Frida herself was known for having an independent identity. She was famous for her work, for her painting, not just for being a wife or a mother. And it is while women are debating the classic question, how do you balance your personal life and career, that Frida really starts to gain global recognition. Frida mania just goes bonkers, bananas, nuts. Like, it just explodes. And it's largely because of the publication of a book. Frida, a biography of Frida Kahlo by Hayden Herrera in 1983. It was the first time somebody had gathered all of this information, all of these private journals, all of these artifacts and interviews to create one book that encompassed what Frida's experience was like. Even though the book had a lot of context and information about the political, historical movements in Mexico, what people seemed to latch onto was the racy interpersonal history and the passionate love letters that Frida wrote in her youth. Amalia felt like she was watching on the sidelines as her favorite Chicana icon was becoming depoliticized.
It was as though the only thing that mattered to Frida Kahlo was her love life. First with the young man when she was, you know, a teenager, young, and then later with Diego. They were both political activist artists in a period of enormous change in Mexico. So I always felt that that part of her story has dropped away.
Frida was becoming a global icon and also a major moneymaker. The biggest art auction houses, Christie's and Sotheby's, had been doing the Latin American art auction for years and would feature big Mexican muralists like Siqueiros and Rivera.
But then Frida gets discovered and she becomes then a vehicle for investment.
And the thing about this new Frida mania is that in most cases, Frida's ideas or her politics were not center stage. It seemed to be primarily her image that people loved and identified with. And so we start to see Frida on posters, on pins, on prints, on t-shirts, on hats, on anything, on mugs, you name it. And ultimately, Frida becomes what Barbie has always been, a consumer product. In 1989, Elle magazine did a photo shoot inspired by Frida.
Those models parodied Kahlo, but completely left out the issues that she struggled with throughout her life, her own disability, or as she herself said in an interview, she wasn't sick, she was broken.
This is Oriana Baddeley. She's a British art historian, and she's the first person to ever write about the phenomenon of Frida mania. Oriana noticed that the same way Barbie had come to embody the ultimate American woman, Frida Kahlo had come to embody
the ultimate exotic woman.
I didn't come here for fun or to flirt.
Frida was played by Salma Hayek in 2002 for the movie Frida. The film features many Mexican actors. It's set in Mexico. It's about a Mexican icon, and yet it was in English.
To Diego and Frida.
Diego and Frida.
And people are still obsessed with Frida Kahlo. If you go to Etsy, the online website where people sell handmade goods, there are over 16,000 Frida-themed objects. Her home in Mexico, La Casa Azul, has become a mecca of sorts for feminists and art lovers. And Barbie also continues to be a culturally relevant icon. Just in May, Saturday Night Live did a skit parodying Barbie's supposed Instagram account.
Welcome to your first day as interns at Mattel, the Barbie division.
Who is Barbie? Barbie is fun. Barbie works hard and plays thoughtfully. She has one boyfriend. She is impossible. She is girl to the max. Barbie is current. You understand?
I I have been spending a really stupid amount of time thinking about Frida Kahlo and Barbie as symbols. And Frida and Barbie today have had their image plastered in so many places and have saturated the market for so long that at this point, they're just symbols that people apply whatever it is they want to see on them, on them.
That was what I was afraid of, truthfully.
Yeah.
I was afraid of that because, as happens in the United States of America, with something that we used to call, way back when, cultural imperialism, mm-hmm. right? I was just like, they're going to, se van a tomar a Frida también. They're going to take Frida too. You know, but I also understand that by Frida becoming so popular, everything that she represents, you know, Mexico, the rejection of Western standards of beauty, a kind of her questioning around gender and sexuality, if that becomes more popular, then that's pretty cool too.
Right. No, totally. I mean, this is like an old debate about what it means that a communist figure is so commercially popular. So Oriana is like, has been one of the biggest critics of Frida mania. And so I asked her, I was like, what do you think about this Frida Barbie? What do you think about it?
It's very hard to say that one supports anything about Mattel and Barbie, but at the same time, I think they have made an effort to do something different. It is sort of interesting.
Wow, you're really surprising me right now.
I know. But the idea of dressing up a doll, I think, could be done quite creatively, and it could well appeal to young children to do something different.
So she likes the Frida doll for the purpose of little girls using the Frida doll as a piece of art. God, I kind of love that.
Despite the fact that Frida Kahlo and Barbie have been these deeply entrenched cultural icons and symbols, little kids just don't know any of that information. And so when they approach this doll, they're giving it their own life and their own meaning.
This is how she looks like. Ooh, ah. Pick up the plastic. Ooh, pretty.
This episode was reported by Antonia Cerejido and edited by Marlon Bishop. The Latino USA team includes Miguel Macias, Sofia Paliza Carr, Andres Caballero, Maggie Freeling, Janice Yamoka, and Sayer Quevedo, with help from Fernanda Chavarri. Our engineers are Ginny Montalvo and Stephanie LeBeau. Our production manager is Natalia Fidelholz. Our fellows are Virginia Lora and Jesse Alejandro Cottrell. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. Special thanks to director Andrea Nevins, whose documentary, Tiny Shoulders, about the history of Barbie, provided necessary context for this episode. You can check it out on Hulu. And to Flor de Toloache, who allowed us to use their music for this episode. And if you like the music you heard, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again for our next episode. And in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. Hasta la próxima. Ciao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the Heising Simons Foundation, unlocking knowledge, opportunity, and possibilities. More at heisingsimons.org. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, and the New York Women's Foundation, funding women leaders that build solutions in their communities and celebrating 30 years of radical generosity.
Do you guys know what you want to be when you grow up?
I want to be a police.
You want to be a police? What about you?
I'm going to be a cow.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA.
It's either good girls, like good family, or narcos, right? And before that, maids. Those are the narratives we've been allowed. Nothing complicated, nothing like this that makes you uncomfortable.
That's next time on Latino USA.
Would you put on a sweater that once belonged to Hitler? Can Chinese zodiac signs predict who's going to be a great scientist? And what happens when you use a training method for dogs to teach doctors? Answers to all those questions on my podcast, Hidden Brain.